Hello again, friends. We've got another episode this week that's just me, Anthony, having kind of a conversation with myself and with you, the listeners, over on our YouTube channel, Epic Blunders. You can find us there. And I wanted to share it with you here. This is about kind of the future of D&D, where I think one D&D may be headed, and the future of tabletop gaming as a whole. I hope you enjoy. All right, friends, we are trying something new today. I've got a fancy little background here. We'll see if that works, if it's too distracting for you. Let me know in the comments. If you think it works just great, well, let me know that too. We're going to talk today about one D&D, and I'm not going to take the same approach that most people have already. There's plenty of other videos out there for you to take a look at. What's currently available in the Unearthed Arcana, the playtest, what they've announced, some of the videos that have come out around it. I want to talk more about the thing that I keep hearing over and over again, that this is for sure 5.5 or even worse, 6th edition. So I want to address that a little bit. And in doing so, I want to talk about basically what we know about one D&D, whatever it's going to be called down the road, and then what we can safely assume to be the path moving forward. So let's dive into the first part. Here's a timeline of some of the other editions that have come out in the past. 3.5 had a handful of books that would come out in the fall of 2007. There was a quick teaser playtest in December of 2007, and then 4th edition came out in June of 2008. So you had a very small playtest window, and then about 6 months of nothing. And then for 4th edition, there was two source books that came out in 2010 with just a couple supplements. There were 6 different supplement books in 2011. You had 3 supplements or campaign books that came in early 2012, and then playtesting for D&D Next, which was going to eventually become 5th edition, began in June 2013. Now, why do I give you that timeline? It's because other editions have ramped down production prior to playtesting beginning on the new editions. And Wizards of the Coast clearly and intentionally has actually been ramping up releases moving forward. They just had in the same video that announced what was going on with one D&D, they gave us, they told us what was going to be happening with obviously the Starjammer and Dragonlance. And they gave us all of those, at least 5 different new releases that are going to be coming in 2023. And that's all obviously prior to the 2024 announcement release of this one D&D. This isn't really their model for new releases, brand new editions, to continue releasing things really, really quickly, especially large supplements like additional campaign settings that they're tapping back into from decades ago to roll those out and then say, never mind. They have absolutely zero breaks in the release schedule that should have led anyone to believe that it was any sort of fully new system on the way. And they've got no sign of stopping anytime soon. It's taken a full decade for longtime settings such as Ravenloft, Spelljammer, Icewind Dale, Dragonlance, and the recently announced Planescape, which isn't going to come out until quarter 4 of 2023, right before this new edition is supposed to even be rolling out. It's taken almost a full decade for all of those to finally see the light of 5th edition. And it's absolutely counterintuitive for these to be dropped into the back end of an old edition in its twilight, only to be immediately sunset and put on the back burner due to a new edition release. It just doesn't make any sense. And Wizards has already done a fair bit to show older, longtime gamers that they're no longer the primary marketing demographic for their products. But there's no sense in further isolating them with a move like this. I'll give you more on that angle in a little bit. Next thing is that Wizards of the Coast has never implied that a 6th edition was ever coming. It was always an update to 5th edition, so you can keep playing what you're playing. They've been carefully consistent in their wording to always use the term new evolution and not new edition, as well as always noting that it will be backward compatible with the existing 5th edition content. So that's one thing. Please stop calling it 6th edition. Please holding out hope for a 6th edition. That's not what's happening. There may be some argument for 5.5, but I'll give you here in a second why I don't even think that's necessarily the way they're going to go here. Here's the next thing that we know. A new box set containing Monsters of the Multiverse, Tasha's Cauldron of Everything, and Xanathar's Guide to Everything just released in January of this year as a rules expansion set. Monsters of the Multiverse could have easily just been released as a standalone only, but I think these three were paired deliberately to continue preparing for what's to come. We have a new box set here. Here's the third thing that we know. One D&D so far has been announced as a three-pronged approach. So let's take a look at each of these one at a time. The first pillar platform is D&D rules. They have worded this to say, this takes what we love about 5th edition and updates the rules of the game to reflect the feedback we have heard from players and where the game is today. Now, that sounds a little bit like what we got from 3.0 to 3.5, and that may be the route that they're going here. We'll find out soon enough. You can take all of this to mean then that they'll eventually set on a 5.5e as the name. You could. The precedent for the only other time they've taken this route was when they set out to basically create an updated errata handbook with the amount of small tweaks that they made to 3rd edition based on feedback they had gotten. It ballooned and it became much larger than originally intended, and I believe the 3.5 player's handbook was almost like 150 pages longer than the 3rd edition because it had expanded so much. That's more than just tweaks. But the half edition was originally meant to convey a small update. That doesn't seem to be what they're implying here. That said, they are once again being painfully cautious so as to avoid any misunderstanding that they're doing a whole new edition. So let me continue to explain why this would be terrible for their bottom line. Number one, D&D Beyond. That's it. That's the argument. But look, that's the prong number two in their one D&D push. It is D&D Beyond. This will be the platform that your digital D&D collection content and tools. This is where everything will be housed. That's what they say. So let's look at this a little bit further. Number one, we have to get to the realization that digital has entirely changed the game for tabletop gaming. Ready access to searchable compendiums, character builders, and shareable content is a Pandora's box that there's no chance of ever closing. The fact that they're making it second of their third pillar this quickly after the acquisition of D&D Beyond as a company itself is because this is the cash cow. That, and you could tell by the hush-hush nature of D&D Beyond employees, if you ever watched their dev update streams for nearly a year, well before Adam Bradford and that whole crew even left, this was coming. You could tell. They couldn't talk about it, but everybody was super excited about something that was coming, and they said, we promise as soon as we know and we have all the details, we can tell you. Well, that's what it was. Legalities being what they are, I'm sure it took quite a bit of time sorting out how to separate from Funcom and who got what, when, and where, which is why it was a secret that kept D&D Beyond in limbo for months. But now it's part of the Wizards family, meaning there's no shared revenue, a larger developer base, and a fully functioning groundwork laid out for what Wizards has tried to do multiple times over in previous editions. 4th edition especially, I'm looking at you. As the subscription model is massively important for the company moving forward, it's important to explain more later on this in the video. For now, know that digital content means immediate updates, errata fixes, retcons. Yes, even the recent Hadozi problems were quickly wiped off of D&D Beyond Digital and the books there hours before Wizards even made a public statement about it. Into the future, should there be any new changes to wording, backstories, or additional content added, it's immediately accessible with the click of a button. They program it in the back end, they turn it on, everybody has access to it, whether it's a change or a completely new release. This is big. This is part of the model. Part of that is being implemented starting with the Dragonlance supplement. The first time we're being offered a physical digital bundle together. And they've said this will become the new norm moving forward. It's what gamers have been begging to see happen for years now. And since D&D Beyond is now in-house, Wizards can easily afford to do that. In fact, they stand to make more money over the long haul this way than prior to the acquisition, since there's no revenue split or smaller licensing fees. They can actually afford to charge less for what they're offering in these bundles. Number three in their three pillars is the D&D digital play experience. And it's in early development, it says. They quote, D&D digital will offer an immersive player experience, rich creation tools for dungeon masters, and a connected space for DMs and players to get together and play D&D. Now, we saw a peek at this, just a small little snapshot. Seems to be an Unreal Engine-based virtual tabletop. The dice roller has already been in place for a while. The encounter builder has as well. The logical next step is to make sure video and audio integration can happen, which doesn't seem like that should really be an issue. There's plenty of ways to make that work. Digital mapping becomes an easy process at that point, and nobody needs to go elsewhere for all of their Dungeons & Dragons needs. No buying extra modules a second time on Roll20 or Fantasy Grounds. No need to wait for releases on Foundry. Wizards is basically hoping to rein all of it in with subscriptions and microtransactions. Yes, you heard me right. But again, more on that later. Finally, number four of what we know. Let's talk about what we know is happening from a design standpoint. One, there's clearly at least an intent to focus on diversity and inclusion. Obviously, this has not hit well, and some might argue that it's not hit at all yet. But you can tell that this is at least a stated desire, which I think is a far cry better than where it's been in the past. I think they're still finding their way on how to translate that to actual content, and I think it is still up to us to hold them to their promises in that way. Second thing that we know about design is that there's always the concern with power creep. And I will air quote power creep because I think it's a misnomer that has gotten a bad rap and doesn't really exist. In reality, I think what we've seen in more recent releases is, barring a few exclusions, like Peace Domain Cleric, Twilight Domain Cleric, there's a handful that I could argue, yes, this is probably somebody didn't do a good job of vetting this. But in reality, what I think we've seen in more recent releases is actually far more balanced classes and subclasses across the board than what was initially given in the player's handbook. While comparing subclasses from, say, Tasha's Guide to the player's handbook, it definitely looks like things have gotten more powerful over time, but I would point at the differences within the player's handbook and argue that it was always there. For example, College of Lore Bard, good. College of Valor Bard, marginally weaker, or significantly weaker. Which is why we later got College of Swords, because, hey, that's actually a decent bard. Circle of the Moon, good. Circle of the Land, weaker. Way of the Open Hand, relatively solid, especially for monks. And you, if you watch any of my videos, you know my take on monks. Way of the Open Hand, decent. Way of the Four Elements Monk, worst subclass in the game. You get the point. And the good ones mentioned, Lore, Moon, Open Hand, they at least hold up decently well to the newer subclasses available. So maybe the problem hasn't been with power creep so much as bad initial subclass design, while the development team found their way with 5th edition. We've already seen the Beastmaster overhaul, arguably one of the worst, get marginally better, and arguably if you wanted to play it, it's actually playable now. Why wouldn't we want the other ones that we've put on a shelf and said, I like the idea, it just doesn't work, and get it to the point where it's workable again. Third thing that we know about design is there's a subtle thing that we've seen in recent releases, and that's the uptick in uses per proficiency modifier of features or a number of times equal to attribute X per day. Doesn't happen a whole lot in the early player's handbook subclasses, class features, that type of thing. But later on, especially as we get into more of the, again, the stuff that's thrown in Natasha's Guide, some of the stuff from Exandria, the Ravnica, Theros books, they have a lot more of those types of things. What we're seeing here is the pendulum swing again. A big argument against third edition and 3.5, obviously, was crunchy number grind and pages upon pages of spells and abilities for each of your character sheets. You're just flipping through. Let me see. What do I do? What do I do? Oh, okay. Fourth edition swung the pendulum in a different direction, and as a result, went to a lot of per encounter or per day uses in an effort to simplify what could be done. You just kind of had it right in front of you. Once you used it, you checked it off and you moved on to the next thing on your list. When fifth edition came around, there was a heavy pushback against anything that reminded people of fourth edition as a quote unquote failed attempt. And you don't see many of those X times per day features in the early books. You fast forward about 7 or 8 years and that design element starts to show up again pretty prominently in these newer source books. I'm fairly convinced that Wizards of the Coast in many ways liked the base concept of what they had in fourth edition for some of these things, but they also knew they had to distance themselves from making D&D Next too similar. What we're seeing now is the pendulum swinging back to pick up some of the more solid ideas from fourth edition without, hopefully, swinging too far in the direction they already abandoned. It wasn't doable a decade ago, but I think it's gaining some traction now. They feel less like MMO RPG powers and more like better fleshed out character features now. And finally, there's a clear shift in normalizing optional rules that are utilized by a majority of player groups. The current Unearthed Arcana playtest already has modified the crit fail and crit success rules to extend to all dice rolls instead of just attack rolls, stating that that's just how most people play anyway. I'm not at all a fan of this, but I understand at least the justification and the attempt here. So don't be surprised to see updated or clarified flanking rules now being normalized, because I don't know that I've ever played with a fifth edition group or watched a fifth edition group that didn't use flanking, but they're optional technically. Look to see those normalized. And if both of these are added, I also wouldn't be surprised if I'm the third most utilized homebrew rule also added to the mix, and that being drinking your own potion as a bonus action. That's just a guess. I don't have any real facts to back that one up. All this, though, falls under the idea of making the game more accessible to newer and more casual gamers. And as a business model, I think that's perfectly reasonable. So, given all of that, what can we expect moving into the future? Well, number one, it's rule changes. Here's what I'm guessing, and you can't take any of these as hard and fast. This is absolutely going to happen. But based on what we know and based on smart guesswork, expect a lot of these things to hit here. Rule changes. Look for heavily reworked class and subclass mechanics that strongly feature proficiency bonus as either a sliding bonus modifier, like we see with the Beastmaster Animal Companion, and also as a scaler times per day for features. It's a nice thing that proficiency bonus scales equally for everyone. Let's make use of that to also gain bonuses without having to build in some other weird mechanic or formula to calculate that. It scales already. It's also been suggested by some that short rests may be done away with entirely, but my suspicion is that short rests will instead have a rework that makes them a little bit more desirable for an entire party to use. Honestly, short rests are amazing if you actually think to use it. And then I played with parties that never actually touch them. I've played with parties, especially if I'm a part of the party, that is constantly looking for any excuse to short rest consistently and sometimes constantly. I have mentioned again in previous videos, I kind of like the Warlock. So speaking of Warlock, though, this is why I don't necessarily think that it's going that route. I think removing a short rest completely would require an entirely new design for Warlocks, making it very much not a backward compatible working update to the system. It would be a completely new overhaul. The other thing is that it's worth noting short rests so far in the playtests are only mentioned twice. Once it's related to the musician feat, it says if you complete a short or a long rest, then you can do this thing, but no real specificity there. And again, as it pertains to an interrupted long rest, still counting as a short rest instead, provided that the rest was at least an hour. So we know that whatever they're testing with short rest is still going to be an hour long. I would like to see short rests reduced, or I would like to see some other mechanic that makes them more useful, but we'll see how that plays out. Third rule change is that we already see a slight shift toward trying to generate better attack rolls and critical successes with the changes in the D20s and also giving more inspiration. That's going to benefit primarily martial classes who are making more consistent attack rolls. The primary unbalance of every class seems to be in some way to revolve around the power struggle at higher tiers between marshals and casters. So I would ideally look to see additional ways of marshals to generate damage to at least more closely be on par with full casters, or give them something else to do once they get to the point where damage isn't necessarily the way that they're going to stand out from the casters. That said, I suspect any artifacts remaining from third edition, and I don't mean items here, but old rules that still exist basically as carryover from third edition will be gone entirely at this point. Grappling in the playtest is already removing the reliance on opposed skill checks and instead replacing it with just an unarmed strike, which is largely the only mechanic left in the game that still uses these opposed skill checks to do something in combat. I suspect there will be a different mechanic also then for Great Weapon Master and Sharpshooter as well, to eliminate the minus five for the plus 10 bonus that doesn't mesh with any other fifth edition rules. What do I think is going to happen? Well, I anticipate this being simplified to something more akin to attacking with disadvantage in order to perhaps guarantee a critical hit. And at first glance, that sounds overpowered, but without stacking any sort of modifier bonuses, crits really are overly powerful without certain barbarian, rogue, or paladin features added on top of that. So it might be something along those lines. Or it could simply be a reworked version of Brutal Critical, just applying that to the Great Weapon Master and Sharpshooter instead. And you just add additional dice rolls on your hits. I'm not really sure, but expect that those flat penalty and bonuses to be done away with as well. Outside of rules, the next thing I would tell you to expect is a June 2024 release for whatever the final title is for 1D&D. Why do I say June? Well, every single edition since third, which would include 3, 3.5, 4, and 5th edition, I'm not sure that I look back far enough to see any sort of AD&D, but it's been consistent ever since. It's all come out in June. Wizards has a thing with nostalgia. I mean, let's be honest, most of us who have been played for any amount of time, we have a thing for nostalgia too. There's a reason why Spelljammer is still coming back out. There's a reason we're going back to Planescape. There's a reason why Curse of Strahd or some variant of it keeps coming out in every single edition. Nostalgia is kind of our bag, right? So expect June 2024 release. That also gives them plenty of extra time to make sure shipping issues are taken care of and that the book's actually finalized and they can run a good chunk of their playtest through the vast majority, at least, of 2023. And this will, I can almost guarantee you, will be a new box set complete with a revised Player's Handbook, Monster Manual, and Dungeon Master Guide. And so they can pair that new original box set, the rules box, with the rules expansion set that just came out in January, and it will comprise the six core books of this new version of D&D, whatever we want to call it, moving forward. We'll have six core books. The only source book produced prior to Xanathar's Guide, Vola's Guide to Monsters, has already received overhaul treatment with Monsters of the Multiverse, and so we don't really have a whole lot of old edition original content stuff left at this point. If you're looking for backward compatibility, this would be it. Adventures produced prior to these books might struggle to line up entirely, but as they're adventures, it shouldn't be overly problematic. There's not a whole lot of mechanics built into those things. Newer projects have already started trending toward the desired design intentions, even if they're not 100% in line with what they ended up settling on or will continue to end up settling on. The other thing to expect in terms of releases is probably no major 2024 releases until the big drop in June. They'll hit hard what they've already announced. Planescape will come out, and then there might be a small adventure related book in quarter one. But because they're still finalizing so many things at the back end of 2023, they're not going to release anything new until after they get this core set back out. But then expect them to already have a few things ready to go and announce for the fall and winter beyond that. That's my guess. Here's the really big deal. We talked about rule changes, potentially. We talked about release dates. That's all fun. But here's the big thing. And if it's not why you're here, you'll quickly realize it's actually why you're here. I'm here to tell you we're moving into a new era of D&D as a service. We've got all the markers. We have digital, not physical access, right? We have subscription access models. We already have digital dice purchases. Soon that will also include microtransactions for miniatures, outfits, monster packs, dungeon design kits, all that sort of thing. On one hand, this excites some people with the kid in a candy store kind of mindset. So many things with easy access and they're just mine with the click of a button. I'll take this. I don't really care for that. Pass on that. Click this, and then get the bundle and it's all mine. On the other hand, there's a reason why some folks rightly struggle with music, movie, and yes, game streaming styled services. Nothing at the end of the day is actually yours. If a company turns out the lights, shuts down the servers, and calls it a day, you're left with nothing to show for, and your wallet is a couple hundred dollars, if not thousands of dollars, short. So it's right to at least question the model, but let me show you why I think it's inevitable. The combined packaging of physical with digital is, you might be surprised, only going to affect a small number of players. The old school players continue to insist on sticking with pencil and paper only, and that's fine. And the vast majority of new players or simply younger players are embracing the digital model, and there's not necessarily a need for both. So while the cries for a combo have been loud, that doesn't necessarily mean they've been in the majority by any means. So I expect there to continue to be physical print copies available for as long as paper still is a usable commodity, which may be shorter than we could imagine, depending on how things go. But that is no longer the primary market demographic for D&D. So consider this. A tabletop group of five likes the idea of a new book coming out, and they pool their resources to get the latest $70 release. And I think that's kind of what they're going for right now. Spelljammer, that set, I think it was at least $70. That's about $14 per person for the physical copy, a single set of physical copy for the group to share. $14 per person, and that will in large part hold them over for the next year or so. That's at least how the majority of tables have operated over time. You get a more gung-ho group or a really completionist-minded DM that wants to own everything. There may be three or four purchases in a single year. Perhaps your group total goes up to, let's get two source books and an adventure release, 70, 70, 30, that's about $170. That's about $34 each person for the year. Now, compare that to a basic subscription. Now, compare that to a basic subscription model. One that most people would be happy to pay or, in fact, already are. Hero tier on D&D Beyond, the current baseline is $2.99 a month, which amounts to $36 per year. Your master tier is $5.99 per month or $120 per year and would be required for sharing content with the rest of your group in a campaign. A simple subscription model nets D&D Beyond $264 per year from the same group of people, which is already $94 more each year than they'd be making with just buying that one set of books for the same group. And you haven't even gotten access to the books yet. You can already see how this is starting to balloon up. So now they're already starting in the black without you having books. Here's where I think digital access will start to roll over into additional subscription models. Paying $5.99 a month for the master tier? Well, if you start paying $9.99 a month, we'll also give you digital access to any source book that's been released. Make it $14.99 a month, and we'll roll all the adventures in as well. Cancel your subscription? Well, you lose access, and so does your group. It's kind of one of those things where once you're in for good. But it feels better, right? And it's nickel and dime access and an open vault, as it were, to everything available for the right price. But in doing so, Wizards rakes in the cash, people feel good about their access, and nobody really complains after a time, just like we've seen with the music, the movie, and the video game industry. At some point, we all just breathe a collective sigh and say, well, I guess that's just how it goes now. So then print copies become the exception, not the rule. And Wizards is okay with that. They save on overhead. They save on shipping. They save on a lot of extra hassle in the print world by just not dealing with nearly as many in the first place. And then here's where it gets really tricky. Microtransactions are already here. I've got friends who don't buy the hero tier, much less the master tier in D&D Beyond, but every week they've got a different digital dice set that they purchased. The model mentioned for the virtual tabletop has already suggested that it will go basically in the same direction. You purchase packs of heroes, you buy packs of monsters, you maybe get a set of subclass monsters to coincide with the book release. Doesn't that seem cool?
Yeah.
Don't like the color of your armor? Well, you upgrade to a Regal Prestige color palette and customize your miniatures on the fly. Basic dungeon sets come standard, but if you want something more resembling a Hellscape or the Feywild, well, there's a pack to purchase for that. And hey, great. I think people will eat it up, and that Wizards knows this is how business happens now. There's a reason they made over $1 billion last year. But I guarantee you that a majority of that still comes from Magic the Gathering. Because what does Magic the Gathering have that D&D does not? Microtransactions in the form of card packs. At the end of the day, it's a collectible game. D&D, for all of its fantastic features, is not meant to be collectible unless you're looking at, you know, the stuff on your back wall and how you have an entire bookcase full of stuff from the last couple of decades. Some would call that collectible. Some would call that collecting dust, right? Magic has even taken steps multiple times over to try to replicate the success of something like Hearthstone and do it all digitally, complete with digital card pack purchases. Does this sound familiar with where things are going with D&D Beyond? It's because it works. It's because it makes money. And it's because it's ultimately relatively cheap for the producer itself. Subscription models are always revenue winners. And microtransactions for pretty costumes or cooler looking weapons have proven to, beyond my wildest comprehension, be a source of millions of dollars for nearly every successful mobile, MOBA, or MMO game in existence. Lest we forget, Fortnite at its core is absolutely free to play. So that's really it. I think a big part of One D&D, however it looks upon full reveal, will be transitioning us from the macro purchases and into a microtransaction full subscription model. And I can't say I necessarily blame them or that I think this is a bad move at all. But what do you think? Am I way off base here? Or do you think I could be onto something? Perhaps you're still holding out for a 6E reveal. Let me know in the comments. And until next time, I'll catch you later.